Moncrief's TV on the Radio, where James Dempsey and I dissect, reflect and pontificate about the good, the bad and the ugly in TV land.
It should be along this road now. It's straight on for another wee bit.
No, but
close the fridge a minute, we're doing the bread in here. What do you do with the stone? Can you cut the bread in off a bread a minute? Hold on a second, I'll put it back into the thing.
Now, all ready. I hope they'll be as nice as I think they are like. I only see him on stage, so I don't know.
But if she's a fan, I'm sure she'll know that you're very down to earth and...
Am I?
Approachable. And did you not know that? Did nobody ever tell you before?
No.
Oh, God, Daniel, bye. Will you come on?
Are you ready for it? I don't know.
Are you ready for us?
Now, that wasn't Tom Cruise. That was Daniel and Magella's B&B Road Trip. It's on Tuesdays, 8:30 on RTE1. John Fardy joins us once again. This is the real Ireland, John. And us effete Dublin metrosexuals better get used to it.
Oh, you're right. Okay, very okay. Good. Yeah. It's funny, you played the Twilight Zone in the, that's part of the sting for this. And there was a vague feeling of that. Now, I'm not being terribly critical of it, but it had passed me by the first season for whatever reason.
Was it, that was the one that was on UTV?
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yes, which yeah. RTE have now
well, that's
bought.
Why it passed you by, because yeah. It was on UTV.
But bizarrely, it got over 500,000 viewers its first episode while it was on UTV, which
right,
is like
yeah.
More than anyone ever listened to in the entire station. So it had kind of passed me by, and I watched it on Tuesday. And I just, what is this? This is bizarre. I mean, it starts with Daniel and Magella getting off. This is Daniel O'Donnell, the great country singer and, you know, unofficial patron saint of Ireland, and his wife Magella. And they get off a plane, I think from Tenerife, where they live a lot of the time. And the premise, for those of you who don't know, is that they're going to tour Ireland, stopping in various B&Bs that have invited them along. And things are going to happen. That's like, I'd love to have been at the pitch meeting, you know? And they sent them, apparently, Vision Productions, I think is the company, sent them two ideas. I don't know what the other one was. And they love this. RTE passed on it and UTV went for it. And lo and behold, it's one of the hottest things in Irish TV. It's really odd. It's really weird. But it isn't bad, I don't think. Let me tell you what happened in the one episode.
Well,
I've seen
Daniel and Magella are kind of charming. They get on very well. They kind of slag each other.
And like at one point in it, there's kind of a Carry On feeling to them. Like at one point, she's dancing around a kind of poster in a bed or a pole in a bed, and he tells her to cop on and stop being sexy and stuff. And it's kind of they remind me a bit of, you know, the way you might have an aunt and uncle who were. You love them and they're kind of quirky and, Daniel and Magella are coming over a bit like that. But no, they are charming. They're clearly mad about each other and they work very well together. But it's more what the point of it is. So they rock up to this place just outside Tralee to the owner there of the B&B, a lovely grandmother who's mad about Daniel. And they show him around and then he goes to this kind of country and western night and he sings a bit. Then the next morning, the grandson of the proprietor takes it to them out water zorbing, where they get into these giant balls and go across the wetlands in Tralee and they have a bit of crack and then they get up and they go to the next one in Sheepshead Bay in West Cork, or Sheepshead Way I should say. Sheepshead Bay is in Brooklyn, I think. But they go there and like they get into a hot tub and then the host is in a choir and at the end Daniel and Magella are in the hot tub and this choir, apropos of nothing, come up and start singing to them and it ends. And it's just, and that's what I mean about the Twilight Zone. Like, this is wacky. Yeah. It's not bad, but man, it's off the charts. Like, it certainly wasn't what I expected. Was I entertained? I kind of was, because I really didn't know where it was going to go next, you know?
Well, that's rare enough, you can say that about a TV show.
And I mean, next week, apparently he's going to be milking a cow and there's a few finar moments and stuff like that, you know? So, look, I want to see what happens the next one and where the road takes them next, you know?
Yeah, because I suppose part of the thing is predicated on the fact that people just are mad about Daniel O'Donnell. And so when he stays in a B&B, they must be choosing the B&Bs based on that.
Yeah, and the whole town and village and Townsland comes to a standstill. You probably remember, it's probably 2 years ago at this stage, after the first series, the first episode, I think, in the first series, there was a woman who was hosting him and this clip went viral, millions of people watched it, where she broke down the fact he was walking, oh, Dad, I just... And he was and her husband was standing there trying to console her, but also thinking, you're crying over another man, this is bad. So the devotion out there is, you know, this was is like the Beatles said, in Shea Stadium.
I married very early. And it was kind of...
Yes, yeah,
there were implications in there that would have made everybody kind of...
They absolutely adore him. And they're kind of charming, you know, it's like an Irish road movie of sorts, the two of them travelling along, and they are kind of charming company in that, but it's not a road movie in terms of, you know, Quentin Tarantino, no one's going to show up and do anything too weird or anything like that.
Texter says, only odd to people inside the M50, there really is a divide.
I don't know about that. Like that's a very easy thing to say. I live outside the M50. I mightn't sound like it, but I do. But no, it on any scale you want to use. I'm not saying it's weird because it's rural or anything like that. Bring it on. And Ireland looks great in it, which I love. And the pictures of West Cork and the way the guest houses are gorgeous looking places you'd love to stay. It's not that. I think finding Daniel and Magella in a hot tub being serenaded by a male choir is odd.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was the real Ireland. If it is, hallelujah. It's not better than bank guarantees, you know. But it is odd. But this is not an anti-rural thing. Far from it.
Yeah. I think... And possibly one thing it reveals is that people might have had a fixed image of Daniel O'Donnell as this kind of almost plasticky country and western singer. He's actually a very keen sense of irony. The two of them do.
Absolutely. And they're well aware. Like, they are being themselves, but there's a slight ironic look in their eyes. You can't help thinking. They know how this seems and how odd it kind of is. And the fact that you see them lying, you know, fully clothed and all, but lying in bed or in their swimsuits in hot tubs and milking cows and stuff, they know what's going on, and I think they're probably having the last laugh. And look, you know, he is a lovely man. I just say, I had one dealing with him about 3 years ago where we were trying to organise an interview with him for a thing in Donegal, and I remember they gave me his phone number and he answered his phone in Tenerife, and he couldn't have been nicer. Was desperate to get to a landline. I found him, in my short experience of him, as lovely as everyone else claims he is. I just like to say that for the record.
Okay.
Despite me calling the show the Twilight Zone.
Bit of showbiz grovelling there.
Yeah.
Right, few bits
come
of
to my guest house, Daniel.
Few bits of TV news. The Big Bang Theories are on the way back for another. I suppose that's not a big surprise.
No,
but there's also going to be a prequel.
Yeah, the character Sheldon, you're going to see him in his younger days as a 10-year-old, as he was this really smart kid and his parents didn't know how to deal with him. People adore that show. I don't want to say it's cliquish or it's geeky. I mean, it's peopled by geeks. I don't find it as hilarious as some other people seem to find it, but what do I know? I mean, it's being commissioned for an 11th and 12th and a prequel series, so I guess bring it on, you know? There's a market there and people are desperate to see it.
Well, I suppose Big Bang Theory is a kind of an old-fashioned sitcom in many respects.
Yeah, absolutely, really. With science as its centre, but it's probably no different to something like, you know, The Golden Girls or something like that in terms of the hit rates of laughs, and it takes place in a room most weeks. So yeah, it's a traditional sitcom wrapped up in science and geekdom.
Yeah. Now, is it true that they all are taking pay cuts to have the series extended?
Now, don't feel too bad for them. They're talking about dropping 10% from $1 million per episode. So they're still getting a hat full of cash for these, you know? Mm. But they're so keen to have it going. And there aren't too many reports of on set fighting or anything like that. They all seem to genuinely get on well together, similar to the whole Friends vibe. It's a good set to work on by all accounts, you know.
And the pay cuts, the lads are taking a pay cut so the girls can get an increase.
Apparently so, yeah. No, I've just read that on one of the sites, but apparently so. I have a feeling that might be more complicated than we're being led to believe at the moment.
Okay, we'll see.
Yeah.
Right, Game of Thrones. What's Game of this final series should be airing soon.
Series 7, they're the middle of the summer. And they've released a poster, and the poster's pretty cool. Now, maybe this is just for Game of Thrones fans, which I am, but there's nothing really on it apart from kind of a date that's marked in ice. So it has the date of when it's coming, and then there's fire in the background, but this symbolises fire and ice, which is quite profound for Game of Thrones fans, you know?
Well, it means the dragon's coming from one side and the zombie's coming from the other side.
Possibly, yes. Yes.
Come on, that's exactly what it means.
That's one way of interpreting it. But bad news for, you know, because there's a lot of landmarks that have been adopted in the Game of Thrones series. The Azor Window, which was used in a famous marriage scene in the first series, which was filmed in Malta. Sea erosion has basically got it. It was this kind of arch in a kind of landlocked cliff that has now collapsed. The Maltese tourist board are very upset. But closer to home, a couple of weeks ago, Storm Doris got rid of that gorgeous, the dark hedges. You've probably seen a picture of this. It's all these trees somewhere in Antrim, and it was used in one of the episodes. But it's a beautiful piece of natural forestry, I suppose you'd call it. And a couple of the trees have fallen over. It's hard to replace trees in their natural environment, as you know. So that actually is a shame, all joking aside, because it's a beautiful piece of turdom, I suppose. You know,
because it must have said that, whether you love or hate Game of Thrones, the locations were extraordinary that they found.
Absolutely. And the way Dubrovnik is used in Northern Ireland, absolutely great location sketch. Are you a fan, incidentally?
I am, yeah. I'm just, okay, just finished the catch up. Really. So,
that's good.
We just finished the last series now, only like last week, the week before. Right. So now there's like,
what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Talk to your wife.
Life has lost all meaning completely. Now, there's going to be a 50th anniversary for Captain Scarlet.
Yeah, happy day. So we've all been rooting for that. A lot of people listening mightn't even remember Captain Scarlet. Back in the late 60s, there was this kind of slight craze for puppets that were machines.
It wasn't a slight craze. It was a huge craze.
Yeah.
Gerry Anderson.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Super Mario Nation, I think they call it, or something. That, not Mario Kart or anything like that, where it was puppets on motors. Most people probably remember Thunderbirds.
Yeah.
And after that came Captain Scarlet. And it was this strange story between the Mysterons, I think that's how
it's called. Mysterons.
Mysterons. You know more about this than I do. They were battling the Earth. Captain Scarlet, they were from Mars. Captain Scarlet was one of them, but then decided to fight with the Earthlings. And it was one of those things. I remember a while ago a friend of mine got this Spider-Man DVD collection of a Spider-Man serial he used to watch in the 80s, and he found it and he couldn't wait to see it, and he put it on. He thought, oh my god, this is awful. And I was watching Captain Scarlet before I came in, because I remember watching the Thunderbirds on a Sunday morning, and I can't really get it how you'd be entertained by it anymore, to be honest, apart from kind of the kitsch valueness of it.
Yeah,
but it's not very entertaining. It's kind of Barbie dolls.
I know. If you watched it when you were 7, you probably thought it was great.
Exactly. But it doesn't really, from the little I've watched on YouTube this afternoon, bear up that well to rewatching, I would say. Sorry to the Thunderbirds fans out there.
Is the 50 years of...
They're just re-releasing a 7-disc series of it, and there's going to be a documentary in that, which I would like to see how it all came together and the craze of it at the time, you know, so...
Yeah. Okay, well, that'll be interesting. Right, we do have to take a commercial break. We're going to talk about more programmes, but we'll go out of this part of the show because we do have a clip of a woman called Anne Sheeran. Here's her reacting to Daniel.
Oh, my God, Daniel is outside. He's here.
Is he there?
He is. Wow. Oh, dear. Oh, dear, oh, dear. Oh, wow. Wow! Oh my God! Daniel is here.
Daniel?
Oh dear!
Well,
oh God Almighty! It's beautiful.
This family, though, have slipped into extremely bad habits that, if go unaddressed, could lead to serious illness.
Did she just put sugar in the baby's bottle?
Yeah.
Here, Killian.
And he's not a baby.
Breakfast for the kids is Killian, his bottle of milk upstairs. Abby usually just gets dressed and gets something in the garage on the way. John, a cup of coffee and a few fags.
Their early morning routine is in urgent need of attention, but it's the walk to school that surprises the experts.
Oh, deli counter.
No.
Oh, is that her lunch?
Guys, this is on her way to school.
It's fried chicken in the morning.
There you go. That's Doctor in the House. That's on Wednesdays on at 8 p.m. on TV3. From that clip, John, do you need experts to tell these people what they're doing wrong?
Well, that's kind of it. I found this pretty depressing, to be honest. So basically, the premise is there's a family in some kind of health crisis, usually overweight of some kind, but certainly living very unhealthily. And there's four doctors, count them, four, who are observing them, will go live with them for a week and then report back. And the usual kind of, you know, narrative of these things is they sit down, they tell them where they're going bad, and then they improve. Mm. And no surprises, that's what happened on the episode last night. In fairness, the woman, the mother in the family, still had a way to go. The problem is, and you know, I've watched Operation Transformation. I thought it was pretty decent TV and didn't feel it was all that overly contrived. But this, I really felt last night that it was completely contrived. I mean, the father in the family says he's worried about, he's has a drink problem, for want of a better phrase, or maybe that, or that's the closest approximation I can come up with. He's drinking 6 to 8 cans a night. He knows it's a problem. Mm. As you heard there, they're going to school, and on the way they're stopping in a garage, and the little girl is having, you know, chicken for breakfast, fried chicken. And, you know, you can laugh at that and stuff, but as a dad, I found it kind of depressing, because as you rightly point out, like, they know that this is bad for them. This is why they've invited the TV crew there. We know what's going to happen. And I just really felt we were all being manipulated in this last night. You four experts who are watching their day transpiring. But the family, the mother and father, are completely aware of this being bad. They're intelligent people. You could hear them talk there. They were articulate people. The fact that they're giving a six-year-old a bottle of milk with sugar in it, they know that this is wrong. They haven't invited this TV crew in to see, oh, what kind of... they know, and they know where this is going to end up. So I just felt really like it was contrived, and it was really manipulating it for all the wrong reasons. I really, it was uncomfortable to watch.
Right. So, we know, we kind of guess what the story arc is. They look at them doing these terrible things, and they try and get them to improve. Yeah, and at the end, it's all, you know, learning.
Yeah, they're all learning. The kids aren't watching as much TV. But, like, I'll give you, for instance, they're called the McKeever family, and the dad in the family, you know, as well as all the drinking, he's smoking. So at one point, when the four doctors go to live with him for the week, there's a shot of him in the porch, and one of the doctors about 3 feet away from him, in the same porch, watching him smoke with a clipboard, writing down clearly, this is bad, he's smoking. And yet he's going on. And I know the whole thing, reality TV, there's a certain amount of that. But this was really pushing the bounds of kind of believability, I thought, you know. Mm. And that whole thing, the very nature of observing something changes the nature of that itself. But this was just, you could see the rivets of it being put together everywhere. And then they get them up in the treadmills. The father's actually reasonably fit because he still plays a bit of football. The mother isn't so fit. And, you know, they cry about how bad they are and the fact that the kids appear to be having health problems. But then they initiate change. It's hard, but the kids start eating vegetables. Now, on one level, you can say, okay, this is a good in and of itself. Here's a family that are clearly down the wrong path, and there's been this intervention, and they're starting one step at a time to change that, and that's good. But do they really need a TV crew there to do that? Because I just felt that good that I spoke of was completely outbalanced by the complete manipulation of this family by a TV show. So I felt uneasy watching, and I've seen all sorts of TV. Yeah.
Well, sometimes in these kind of shows, you get the sense that you know the second and third act, when they you know, when they help cure them of their terrible habits, is not for the family, it's to make the audience feel better, because the main reason the audience is tuned in is for the delightful joy of judgment, so they can sit on their own fat asses and go, oh, look at those appalling people.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what the if we're being on the side of the angels here, what the people who are in favour of this kind of TV would say, well, hang on, you're watching this, maybe as a result of this you're going to walk to work instead of getting the bus, or maybe instead of going for the packet of crisps you'll go for an apple tomorrow. And I get that, but there are probably other ways to motivate people to those changes than kind of parasitically living off this family, who seem to know what the right thing to do is. And as I say, they didn't need to be told by a large production team that were in their house.
You know? Or maybe you'll watch it and go and have a fag and 6 to 8 cans of beer a night.
Yeah,
you might be inspired.
I don't think that's the point, but quite possibly, yeah. So, you know, people talk about, like, there's on TV, we're going through this obesity porn or wellness porn, and it's not a phrase I really like, but that phrase kept popping into my head last night. And, you know, then there's, you know, they, and this is not to do a disservice to any of the tragedies, but the father in the family had recently lost his mother, who was very close to, but then they go to a picture of her on the mantelpiece, and you just knew that that was going to happen, and uncomfortable viewing, you know. I'd love to know if any other people saw and how they felt. Were they motivated to go running the next day or just to turn the channel, you know?
I'm in my late 60s and I love The Big Bang Theory, says one texter. Somebody else says, any geeks I know don't like Big Bang Theory, so now. Okay, fair enough. Somebody wanted to know when House of Cards is coming back. John was just saying there during the break, it's the end of May in 2017. That's season 5. It's coming back. Though someone on Twitter says, John Fardy must be a baby. He doesn't get Super Mario Nation and Thunderbirds, etc. Yes, he is. He's a tiny little baby. Right, we're going to go on to John's third pick of the day. This is on Netflix. It's called The 7-5.
When did you enter the police academy?
January 26, 1982.
Did you receive integrity training at the academy?
Some, yes.
Did you personally treat it seriously, the integrity training?
No.
Did the instructors treat it seriously?
Not at all.
Mr. Dowd, in your experiences in your first year, did you come to learn what it meant for a police officer to be quote-unquote good?
Yes. Well, being good is a cop that would never give up another cop. A cop that if he witnesses something go down, he's 100% behind anything a cop does, no matter what it is.
There you go. That's The 7-5. Obviously, that's on Netflix, so you can download it at any time. And it's a documentary. John, you'll really like this.
I do. It's a fantastic documentary. Some of the headlines of what we're saying, you know, this is a real life Goodfellas. And it is in every sense of the phrase. One, and most importantly, it's that good. But it's also in that space. Michael Dowd, who you heard there, who was giving testimony at a Senate kind of inquiry into his corruption, was possibly, and I think they said this in the promotion for it, the bentest cop imaginable. This was Brooklyn in the early 80s. And, you know, people forget New York. You know, we've kind of come of age in Celtic Tiger, New York, where people went for the weekend and shopped and had drinks and cocktails in Central Park. New York was a kip in the 70s and 80s. There's a famous headline from the New York Post when they went bankrupt and Ford, the president at the time, you know, Ford to New York, dropped dead. It was porno cinemas. It was a gritty, grimy, seedy place in a lot of ways. I mean, it was beautiful in other ways.
Yeah.
And this documentary, a real life documentary, obviously takes place in this. Michael Dowd was a normal working cop who kept coming across drug gangs and scenes he was busting into, and there'd be money everywhere, and didn't have the wherewithal to say no to it, and slowly started taking a bit off the top, and then started taking it all, and then started running protection rackets for those drug dealers he was robbing, and became this utterly, utterly corrupt cop, and started using his friends and hoodwinked, they knew what they were doing, brought them into it, befriended this Dominican crime lord, Adam Diaz, and was running this industry of drug dealing all through this, it's a district in Brooklyn, the 7-5, it was one of the worst ones, and crack was all over the place, and was making millions and was chartering private planes, and then eventually, and it's not ruining anything, gets caught. But it's told, and they have no footage really of what happened in the time because it's early 80s, but it's told through interviews, it's told through the Senate hearing, and you hear his moral relativism there. He's saying a good cop was someone who would do anything for you. So the highest authority was your friendship among your other cops, and whatever they did, you had to back them up, even if it meant you were ripping people off. And it's peopled by these characters who are policemen but sound like they're straight out of the Godfather. And I mentioned the gangster, Adam Diaz. It's spine tingling. He went to jail for 12 years, but you hear him describing his relations with the cops and this guy, Michael Dowd, and it's scary. This man has blood on his hands now. He went away and he did time for it, but it's petrifying. It's the most relentlessly entertaining, compelling documentary I've seen since Making a Murderer. It is brilliant. Watch it tonight.
And I suppose the difference between the corrupt cop and Could you even tell them apart if there wasn't a caption telling you who they were?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, completely. And that's I say, the whole moral relativism. And it really gets strained at the end, that people who started out trying to take Dowd down a right path ended up following him down. And there's a lot of broken friendships in it. And the way the final sting erupted and got him into jail, the way all that went down and the broken friendships that you always knew were going to happen, because these are crooks at the end of the day. I don't want to hero worship them. They were horrible people who went to jail for a long time. But the way some of those friendships broke down is kind of heartbreaking. And just like the way friendships in Goodfellas broke down, it's brilliant.
Just going back to Doctor in the House that John was talking about, I, like you, have seen many of these health change programs. What I do for these is I call my children, early teenagers, to watch, as I think any exposure to healthy or unhealthy lifestyles will hopefully help them make better choices in life. For this purpose, I think the step-by-step Ladybird's Guide to the Family Failings is useful for my kids to see. Lots of people texting in to say the 7-5 that John was just talking about is fantastic. Pete says that Dowd guy is such a hateful character. He ruined people's lives. Didn't bat an eyelid. He just bragged about it. And yeah, loads of people texting in to agree with John on that one. Lots of people as well saying that they enjoyed the Daniel O'Donnell clip that we played just coming out of part one of this section. I'm getting that Daniel a fan is my ringtone, somebody else says. Somebody else actually texted in to say that they have fizzy pants after hearing Daniel. I'm not too sure what that is.
Well, I could take a guess. I don't know what time it is.
Though somebody else also texted in to say John Fardy has the most wonderful voice. John,
let's get a number and see what... No,
John,
sorry.
You're making pants fizz out there. Thanks very much for coming into us today. John Fardy there. More from TV on the radio every Thursday on Moncrief from 3.